So posture. When your back goes out, you become acutely aware of posture. And what's clear, and this is certainly what we're meant to do in our meditation, is that if we can align, particularly our head with our spine, so that the weight of the head, which is rather heavy, is being held by the spine, by the bones rather than by the muscles, then we are in a much healthier and safer posture. I myself find it difficult to hold that posture. And it's something that you might have to experiment to find. For me, it feels so unnatural that I have to almost force myself into that posture. And then when I get there, I can feel it's like a weight has been lifted off my shoulders and my back. I can feel all of a sudden I feel lighter. So see if you can find that place of balance. You know, I actually refer to it often when I'm teaching meditation, but I don't emphasize it. So here we go, emphasizing balance. And as I often say, balance is not a static place. It's much like a tightrope walker who is tipping left and tipping right, constantly trying to stay on the rope. So one of the things we can do as we meditate is keep checking back in to see if that balance has gone off, if we've lost our alignment. Once we have some alignment, it becomes easier to relax. If we're out of alignment when we relax, there can actually be more pulling on different muscles that shouldn't be pulled on. But when we're aligned and we relax, everything is still held by the bones, by the skeleton. This is a really interesting area just of mindfulness. Because it's not just feeling the body, but it's actually trying to hold the body in a healthy way. So it has a purpose beyond just awareness. Then connecting with the breath and the body. We can begin with just awareness of the whole breath. When we have that kind of expansive view of the body, you can feel how the breath is moving into the chest and the belly. This rhythmic expansion, contraction. But then we might also notice how the breath begins and ends at the nostrils. So here, instead of movement, we're feeling touch. Maybe the subtle movement of the nostrils expanding, contracting. So you might feel the breath there on the upper lip, the air flowing across, or you might feel it in the nose. It's more subtle, but you can also feel it in the throat. Thoughts may drift through, or they may completely capture your attention. Though sometimes you may still feel your breath, even as you're thinking, sort of half paying attention to the breath. Or you may get completely lost in thoughts, lose touch with your body altogether. But at some point you recognize that thinking is happening and you come back. Each time you return, each time you really wake up in that way, it's like beginning your sit again. It doesn't hurt then in that moment to also check back with your posture, check with your energy. Are you still alert? Or is there any tension? Well, this can happen in just a few seconds where you kind of restart and then relax. If thoughts are very persistent, it's kind of a stream of thoughts, probably the most important thing is to not struggle with that. So we have to kind of work intuitively with this type of flow of thoughts. If you can just feel the breath a little bit, even as there's a flow, it's difficult to stop, it's just a stream of thoughts. And then you stay in touch with the present moment. It's when we get frustrated with the thoughts or try to push them away, try to hold them away, that we really create more problem for ourselves. Of course, it's more pleasant when things are quiet in the mind. We can't make that happen. We just keep showing up and each time we do, really come back with clarity. It can be a little bit more settling. Just a gradual process. All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I think that covers all the time zones people are in. So I will take this opportunity to just spend some time talking about pain, since that's what's happening. I'm actually not in a lot of pain this moment, so, but you know, it's easiest for me to talk about what seems present and what I've been reflecting on. I'll say that, you know, it's interesting. I'm sure many of you have had back problems. It's fairly common in our culture, and you know, it's interesting. First of all, just to, you know, the tendency to want to figure things out, a very strong human tendency. Why is this happening, right? And it's not really the question that mindfulness is about. Mindfulness is about what is happening, or even not. You don't even have to answer the question, just to be experience what is happening, which doesn't necessarily mean that you know what it is actually. Just like you're just sensing it, right? But this tendency to try to figure it out. I've read a certain amount about back troubles, and there's this one theory that you know, people used to have ulcers all the time, but then now people have back problems, and that it's actually all like created by the mind. I mean, it manifests in the body, but all those things are like stress related things that that are generated by the mind. And I don't know about that. I mean, it's maybe true and may be helpful, but I think the reason that we have back problems is because we stand on 2 feet. And, you know, there are very few beings on this planet that choose to stand on 2 feet, maybe kangaroos. But we're not really designed. So our bodies like didn't really evolve to hand. We decided to stand up because it was a way that we could use our hands to do stuff, right? But the structure of our bodies doesn't actually support it very well, because as I was talking about in the meditation, as soon as you're slightly out of alignment, there's all this stress that happens at the back. So that's my why. But I like to get back to first causes. Yeah, we just never should have stood up in the first place. And believe me, when your back goes out like this, you're down, you know, you're like, oh, back to crawling. Yes. So the, and I talk about this. The first time I had an experience with a back problem was 25 years ago. It was in my last semester of graduate school. Not surprising, a highly stressful moment in life. And I stepped out of the shower and like reached for my towel, and just there was this crushing pain in my back, and I did indeed collapse to the floor. But looking back, I see that what was the biggest problem was my fear. And this is what I think is so important to see about this, that I didn't know what was happening, right? This had never happened to me before. So I had this tremendous fear that something horrible was happening. And as soon as you combine fear with pain, you're caught in this cycle. And because fear generates all this projection, right? And all the projection is about like, oh, like I'm crippled, or and this, you know, I'm never going to be able to walk again, or this pain is going to be here forever, or you know, I broke something, right? Or, you know, I'm going to need surgery. All those stories, right? And so once I recovered from that to some degree, now, and then of course, then the whys come in, right? Why is this happening? And you go to a doctor, and of course they will tell you, like, oh, your spine's not really straight. Oh, and one leg is shorter than the other, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know, oh yeah, what they're saying is you have a human body, right? Human bodies aren't like these perfect structures. They're like slightly just a little, but again, it's like trying to explain it away. I'll say, like, the time when this hit me the worst, which was 2006. And that was a result of getting an iPod for the first time and getting on a rowing machine where I was not paying attention. Right? This is why I really discourage people exercising while they listen to music, because you lose touch with your body. And I did things, and it felt fine at the time, but 2 days later, because this is one of the stories about back, supposedly, it's like, look back like 2 or 3 days, what were you doing? And I this was another like collapsing, but this was, I collapsed on the floor in my office where I am right now. And my wife and a friend were upstairs, and I was moaning, and they came down. And later on, the woman or friend who was there said, it looked like I was in labor. I was sweating and groaning and curled up into a ball. So, you know, when I went to the doctor that time, they told me, they gave me Vicodin, which doesn't help pain. It just makes you feel happier, so you're not as bothered by pain, which is like the key, right? It's not a mental, it's not a physical treatment. It's a mental treatment. So, but Vicodin doesn't go well for drug addicts and alcoholics. So I took that for like one day, and then I was like, oh. As soon as I take one of those, I feel like, oh, I feel normal now. I just feel fine. Like, oh yeah. And then fortunately, because I've been well-trained, my next thought is, you're a drug addict. People who take Vicodin and say, I feel normal now, are not normal. So I stopped. And because I realized I would take it and I could still feel all the pain, you know? So again, it's the mental, it's the relationship. So when this hit me last night, and just for a why, I've been dragging boxes around my office, emptying out my office for people to paint it and getting things back in and bending over and lifting up stuff. So mild injury. But now when this happens, I just go, oh, this is happening. What do I need to do? You know, like, oh, I need to get down on the floor. Oh, I need a heating pad. Oh, you know. And I know it's impermanent. I know it's going to pass. It passes remarkably fast, considering like how, like, last night at one point I stood up because I wanted to go upstairs and I couldn't lift my legs like off the floor to take a step. And I was like, oh, this is really bad. Like, what do I do? Now I'm like walking around, and I bet I'll be playing golf next week. Golf is very healing for me. So it's what I call the healing power of golf, but doesn't hurt my back for some reason. Why? Ha ha ha. It's in my brain, right? Makes me happy, so it doesn't hurt. So then this idea of the relationship so much of what's going on is about the relationship to it, right? So there's the fear, there's the big relationship. And then, of course, fear is a form of aversion, but it's but we can definitely separate those two. Fear is that, you know, mental idea of projection about like where this is going to go to. The aversion is the just hating it, right? Like I hate this right now. So that's like the, but both of them have this negative impact on the pain. They make it worse. The particularly they tighten the body. You know, when you have aversion, there's a physical response. And the worst thing you can do when your back is in spasm is to tighten. So then you have to overcome with your mind. You have to go, oh, I need to relax. So your mind is like in this struggle with your mind, first of all, because your sort of reactive mind, you know, maybe the lower centers, the amygdala or something, is sending all these signals like danger, 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 watch out, stop, got to get rid of this. But if your prefrontal cortex or whatever, you know, your knowledge like is like, no, it's not that bad. It's okay. You've been through this before. What you need to do is breathe. And wow, like, because what your body is doing is trying to clamp around this, around that pain, and particularly your back, right? It's all clamping around it. And you have to breathe, you have to soften your belly and breathe it out. And it's like, you know, there's this sort of mental battle of like, no, you're just going to relax. But I don't want to relax. So you're just going to relax. But I don't, I'm going to, what, wait, I can't relax. Relax. And then you breathe and it's like, oh yeah, that is better. Okay. Yeah, thank you. And so it's, you know, it's a mindfulness practice. Duh, right? And because mindfulness, to be really, you know, in full bloom, has to contain wisdom, has to contain understanding. This is the clear comprehension. I think I may have been talking about clear comprehension. I know I was talking about it recently, but I'm not sure if it was with you guys. I think it was. So clear comprehension is the second element of mindfulness that sometimes gets overlooked. Mindfulness is just the awareness of the knowing of the experience, but clear comprehension is this understanding of it. So the clear comprehension for me is, oh, I'm having back spasm or whatever it is, I call it that, and it's not as bad as it feels. You know, the feeling is really bad, the feeling is really frightening, but it's actually frightening, but it's not as bad as that. And it's manageable if I am able to relax, even though I feel like I shouldn't, I can't relax. So it's that clear comprehension allows you to then move through it. So I had this other really striking moment where my wife plugged in the hot heating pad. And I kind of limped up to the bed, and you know, and I was having to, and I was just discovering, oh, it hurts more when I'm standing on my right foot. When I'm on my left foot, it's not as bad. And I was sort of, again, just like starting to pay attention, right? Starting to see the details, what's going on. And so that I was, if I leaned against something when I was on my right foot, I kind of get over to the bed and I somehow got into my pajamas and I lay down on this hot pad, which felt nice. And I just lay there for a few minutes and I'm breathing and the pain is lessening and lessening. And all of a sudden I realize there's no pain. And I had that sense of just pleasure. And, you know, and there is this sort of argument that all pleasure is actually just the end of discomfort. You know, I don't, that seems a little extreme, but it was really distinct in that moment that, like, right, the end of that pain feels so good. That's so interesting, right? It's the same feeling. It's why Thich Nhat Hanh says, if you can just remember that you don't have a toothache right now, you know, then you can enjoy this moment. Like, oh, no toothache. Gosh, that's, but it was just so striking. Like, oh my God, this is like, oh, so good. And it lasted a few moments and then started to come back a little bit. But again, these, like, you know, our mindfulness practice, part of being a Dharma practitioner is that, and taking refuge, is that we try to see everything through the lens of Dharma. And of course, when I'm in that pain, I'm not like, oh, you know, just intent, like everything is impermanent and this is aversion. But I have trained enough that my relationship to it is fairly constructive, you know. It's not a panic. And in any case, I'm not meaning to, you know, brag about myself, but that it really is, these are the things that become really interesting. So, you know, I wrote there's a long piece about pain in my workbook, because that I wrote, that's mostly about working with pain in meditation. So I was sitting this morning before this class and working with the sensations and doing the practice that I do in that way. And it's something that's so interesting, such a powerful tool for meditation practice, that when you have pain, there's this opportunity to see all this stuff that I've been talking about, to see fear, to see aversion, and then to see the power of mindfulness to let it go. You know, because aversion, we don't usually get to see aversion so much in such stark moments. But when we're feeling physical pain, if you can remember, it's hard to remember at that moment, but if you can remember, oh, it's the resistance right now is making it worse, and breathe and soften, relax, and then actually go to the sensation. Try to really go into it, and you could say befriend it, you know, not make it the enemy, you know. That, I think, is what this is about. And it's one way of characterizing this. We certainly think of pain as an enemy, but we also know, though, that the function of pain is to protect us. The function of pain in terms of our evolution is to tell us that there's a problem that we need to be aware of. And so, you know, when you touch the hot stove, your hand jumps away instinctively, because that's dangerous. If you leave your hand on there, your flesh is going to burn. And that's not going to, you know, make your life better. So pain isn't, you know, it can seem like pain is just this punishment, you know, and it's easy to fall into that kind of mind state when you're meditating, to start to feel sorry for yourself. Like, oh, I'm meditating and like, it hurts, and you know, this isn't, I didn't want this to hurt, and this shouldn't be hurting. Why is this hurting me? Like, what's wrong with me that I, you know, I know I've seen all those Zen masters, they, it doesn't hurt them to meditate, you know. So to see that, so we get to, it's really an opportunity to be with this difficulty and to train yourself, because, you know, and this is a training for death, you know, to be aware, to be awake when when things get really difficult. That's one of the purposes of this practice. It's not one we talk about a lot. People don't like to hear about death. death. Sorry. But, you know, it's going to happen. That time's going to come. So when you're in pain is a really good time to practice for that, because death is rarely pleasant. I mean, I don't know. It just, you know, it either happens in a sudden moment of agony or in a long stretch of unpleasantness and pain and discomfort. So either way, you know, unless you're, you know, do a overdose of fentanyl, that's probably pleasant. You know, it's going to be difficult. And in any case, you know, there's going to be moments. We can put aside death for the moment. There are moments in our lives, right, that are painful, that are difficult. And I mean, maybe it's too much of my emphasis in practice. But I mean, here we are living in this time. It's so difficult, you know. People don't have the tolerance. I mean, it shows how little capacity people have for being with discomfort, that people would like take guns to the state house and say, you know, don't tell me to wear a mask. I'm going to kill you, you know, if you tell me to wear a mask that's going to like help other people from dying. Like, we just have a lot of people apparently have a very limited tolerance for discomfort. And that just means, essentially, it means they're making their life a lot more difficult, because discomfort isn't, you know, there are many degrees of discomfort that are easy to get through. You know, the discomfort of wearing a mask is so trivial. You know, it doesn't have, it's, and when you make it a problem, when your aversion to it becomes like a big deal, you are creating that suffering, right? And so the same is true of mild amounts of pain. I mean, I could have last night like turned it into just like a horror show nightmare. It's like, this is just a hassle. It's unpleasant, you know? I mean, if there were video of me going to the bathroom at 4 o'clock in the morning, it would be humorous as hell, you know? I mean, it was like getting out of the bed and leaning against, anyway. So the thought that just went through my mind is, I love pain. And I mean that I love it as a Dharma topic. I don't love it at all. I'm not a masochist, if in case you're wondering. So I'll just open it up now. That's plenty from me. Thank you guys for tolerating. And I hope it's of some use. It doesn't seem like I'm just like indulging. But you know, I'm not. I mean, I'm, anyway, please go ahead and share.
Hi, Kevin. It's Angela.
Hi, Angela.
Thank you. I'll be very quick. I just, I really appreciate this topic, even though I don't really deal with pain. I don't sit, I mm-hmm. sit in a chair. Uh-huh. I don't sit cross-legged because it's really uncomfortable.
Uh-huh. Why is it uncomfortable as soon as you get into that posture?
Yeah. Like it's just my knees. It's really, I just don't do well sitting.
You very likely are not sitting properly. Mm. You know, why are we talking about this? I know Myrna knows about this because she's a Zen practitioner. So the you get on a zafu, and I'm actually sitting on my zafu right now, and which is very firm, and you sit towards the front of the cushion so that your hips tilt. And that helps your knees to get down to the floor. If your knees don't reach the floor and you're really in the correct posture, then you put cushions under your knees because you need to have your knees supported.
Okay. Yeah.
But you should definitely get some pain. It'll help you with your practice.
Yeah. No, I see that. And I also just, as you were talking, thinking for me, because I'm not working with physical pain as much as emotional pain and how just related it is for me. You know, I see the same like pattern of fear and projection and aversion and why is this happening to me? And yeah, so I just appreciated it even, and it's easy to feel sorry for yourself like that.
Yes.
To, you know, I experience a lot, relate to. So I found it very helpful just even thinking in that way.
It's the same thing. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I think emotional pain is partly more subtle. So it's harder to be mindful of it. Like it's like, if there's a physical pain, you can locate it. And that makes it easier to be mindful of it. With emotional pain, it's also locatable, but it's not as distinctly locatable. And certainly the aversion to it. And just as you're saying, that we have a tremendous tendency in our culture to try to figure this out. That's why there's an industry of psychotherapy, you know, not, and that's only one aspect of psychotherapy, you know, and it's not to suggest that that isn't useful to some extent, but without mindfulness, it really misses the real healing potential, which is why so many therapists now are learning, practicing, and teaching mindfulness. It's just kind of like they've realized that, like, okay, besides this work of sort of surfacing and daylighting, or what are the, is that what they call it? Sunlighting the experiences that have been sort of hidden. There's this practice of being aware, you know, with the experiences in the body that's vital in order for that to be processed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Kevin. It's John.
Hey, John. Hi.
This is really timely. I really appreciated your discourse on pain. I just found out I have to have knee replacement surgery.
Oh.
And every time someone talks about it, in addition to the relief that comes after it's complete, pain, it's just like jumping out at me. And I kind of switched my mental kind of understanding of it to what happens after the recovery, that's going to be great. But I never really thought about the pain part of it as an opportunity to practice. And of course, everything is, but your talk today really helped me anticipate, because there's like an anticipatory contraction around thinking about the pain, which is what you're talking about when you're in pain also. And so I really appreciated your talk today.
Thanks, John. I really hope that goes well. And yeah, I think it's also helpful when you can work with pain. It allows you to be less dependent on pain relievers as well, you know, because as we know, much of the opioid epidemic is the result of people taking opioids to recover from surgery and different kinds of pain. And again, they didn't have any sort of training or capacity for working with the pain. And that's, again, that's not to say you shouldn't take some medication. It's to say you probably don't have to have like 50, you know, OxyContin and take 8 of them a day, you know. I mean, maybe, you know, but you know, and as you're talking about, like, our practice, when we make this into a practice, then it becomes like an interesting thing, to not to be like toughing it out, but like, oh, do I need this? You know, is this going to help me right now? Like last night, my wife was like, do you want some ibuprofen? I was like, ibuprofen will not help this. What I need is a hot pad. And then this morning at breakfast, I said, now I would like some ibuprofen, because I know, like, okay, now is the time that I need to get rid of the inflammation. But it, yeah, it just like bringing some consciousness to it, rather than being in that reactive mode. Yeah. Guess nobody else here has had any pain, so. Ah. Well, so I was in the grocery store last week in Pacific Grove, and as I was checking out, the checker said, "So, do you have plans for the holidays?" Did I tell you this? And I was like, "What? What? Like holidays? A holiday? Like, apparently, this week is Thanksgiving. So, I hope nobody has any plans. It'd be very unwise to have plans." I had to do some grocery shopping yesterday, and I was like, what are all these people doing out grocery shopping? Why are there lines for the grocery store? So, it is strange. Yeah. It is strange to be in this world. I guess I could, that could be the closing of, maybe I should write that, have that be the end of a book. It is strange to be in this world. The end. But I'm going to be back here Friday evening. And in a couple of weeks, I don't know if, Angela helpfully put in a couple of events that I'm doing, the December 12th and 13th with Vimala Sara. And I've been spelling her name wrong, Angela, so I'll fix it.
You have where? Is it?
Yeah, it's V-I-M-A.
Oh, right. Cause I guess I copied
instead
it
instead of V-I-M-I. That's how, yeah. I've been spelling. Okay. I've been spelling. I just noticed cause I was quoting her the other day.
Thanks.
So we're going to do 2 days. Vimala Sara is a really strong teacher. She has a different Buddhist tradition from mine, but she's in recovery, and she has a book called 8-Step Recovery, which has nothing to do with the 12 steps. It's more harm reduction model. But she and I have taught together a bunch, and I think we're a good pair. And then on that's the 12th and 13th of December. And then on the 20th, I've been doing this day long at Spirit Rock for 5 or 6 years at least, called Keep Coming Back, Dharma Recovery and Renewal. So I do it at the end of the year, the beginning of the new year. A full day long, which schedule is packed. And Greg Pergament, who teaches Qigong with me, will be with me that day. So that'll be fun. He's wonderful friend and teacher. Well, I'm going to have to cancel my tea time for this afternoon, sadly. Beyond that, I do really hope everybody, you know, finds a way to enjoy Thanksgiving. You know, I'm not a, I'm kind of a negative person. So Thanksgiving, I enjoy the food and everything, but I have a problem with gratitude because I'm a karma fundamentalist. And so I figure everything just happens because of karma. So what am I thanking? On the other hand, I'm immensely grateful. So I don't know. That's really helpful. Angela, you might have to cut out this part of my talk because this is, so obviously I don't have to tell you guys. I feel like you're the smart people, but you know, just to be super safe right now, it's only a few more months and, you know, things are going to be better. So just be mindful of your aversion and try to find some joy. Yeah. There is a lot of joy. I'm going to take a walk now, and that's going to be joyful because I can walk. So thank you, everybody. Have a great day.